Reality. It's an interesting word. And what is very interesting about it is that it's subjective. And that is like a contradiction. Because you would expect that reality would be something common to everybody at all times. After all, it's real. If it's real, we should all see it in the same way, is it not? Now, we understand from our practical experience that this is not the case, that multiple people can see the same thing and have different ideas about what they just saw. So this makes me think about consciousness. I was reading this morning a very interesting article by a person who is kind of turning the whole idea of what consciousness is or what we can do with it on its head. This professor, his name is Metzinger. He works in Germany and he has done a lot of research and a lot of interviewing people who meditate. And he boils things down to trying to understand what consciousness is. In fact, he's not very interested in the concept of self. He sees that when people go into deep meditative states, the concept of self becomes less significant. Let's take, for example, the complete opposite of the meditative state. He was speaking about social media, about the way in which we are programmed according to the desires of those who create the algorithms to feed us information. Now, this is a very obvious kind of thing because, let's say, you're reading these social media feeds and you're being given information which is subtly directing you to act or appear or to purchase or to think in a particular way. It's creating a pattern. If you think about imagery, after a while, images create a pattern. And when that pattern is created, we tend to sink to the pattern. One of the greatest pattern creators that exists is music. Let's say you're at a concert. And let's say it's for modern music. The first and foremost pattern creator is the drum, that beat, that rhythm, which makes everybody move and everybody feel in a certain way. And the bass is accenting that rhythm in according to the melody. So you have this rhythm with the bass as the foundation to the melody, and all of that is pushing you to feel in a very specific way. And you can start to see this pattern in all aspects of life. You see it with food, you see it in families, you see it in schools, you see it in television or the movies. Pattern creating. Some patterns attract us, some patterns repulse us. But if you think about how we are moving through life, we are basically seeking out a pathway through patterns which are given to us from exterior sources. As far as I am concerned, I am very partial to the patterns of nature. But I also fall victim to those patterns of music which reverberate with me very powerfully. And I really love the mantras of Vedic chants. I really love when multiple brahmanas are chanting those Vedic hymns and that pattern of that energy just flows over me. I love to enter into that pattern. If you think about it with our various ways in which we go through life, we are flowing through different patterns, choosing either out of necessity or out of our own desire to flow with these particular patterns which are in the exterior world. And those patterns create a vibration, a resonance within our realm of consciousness. And this is the rule of life. Now, we have often said, you have to be very careful who you associate with because it creates patterns which can be negative. But that's a very limited way of looking at it, because even you might associate with good people, that can create very great dissonance within you. Even you engage in spiritual life, let's say you go before the deities in the temple room, and you expect that that pattern, which is there, of energy, of the visuals and everything, the feelings, should change you. But sometimes it doesn't, because our pattern that we walk into that room with doesn't leave us, because we have somehow embraced it. We've become attached to it. We have this idea of who we are, which is our conception of self. Yet that conception of self has so many patterns imprinted on it from the exterior world. This is why we call it conditioning. It changes us. So that reality within which we live is to a large extent in the exterior realm, outside of us, pushing in on us, changing us. So that scientist we talked about in the beginning interviewed people who meditated, and he got various, he interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and they all gave very unique and personal insights into what is going on when they enter a meditative state. And one of the things which were extremely significant to him is that the deeper the state, in other words, the more one enters into the state of meditation, the less one is bound by the concept of self, which includes all this external baggage. Obviously, there are different levels to meditation. There are different skills. There are different capacities in the meditators themselves. Just closing your eyes and breathing is not necessarily meditation, because if all of the mind is filled with activity and the body is halfway out the door, that's not meditation, even though it kind of looks like it. So the more one is independent of these external seeming situations of reality, and the more one is letting all that go, the deeper one gets and the closer one gets to one's natural state of consciousness. And in that natural state of consciousness, this idea of I am as something, that I am a form, I am a personality, I am this, I am that, becomes less important, because one is simply living rather than being something. All of these things that I just mentioned, these belong in a connection with doing. It's kind of like, I am, and therefore I can do. In the purest state, I am. This is being. In that state of being, all of these identifications with specific things are not relevant. Now, here's where we get into trouble with philosophy, and people start getting upset with, you know, servant of Krishna versus Mayavadis and impersonalists and stuff like that. We're not talking about this. We're simply talking about consciousness. For us who are devotees, who are devoted to Krishna, we are very eager in that state to make a connection with the divine. It's not that first you have to figure out who you are, and then you can make a connection. It's almost as if you're saying, I have to figure out I'm a gopi first so I can do these gopi things. This is one of the, I would say, pitfalls or trap that a neophyte can fall into. That I have to go from this pure consciousness into a form where I can do things. Obviously, gopis do things. But we're talking about consciousness here, our consciousness. So our consciousness, when it is encapsulated as being, attempts or allows the connection to the divine being. As being, all these disturbing elements of self are not relevant. Most relevant is the connection to Radha and Krishna. The being connects, the divine connects to divine. And within that connection, there is interaction. And while that connection is strong and active, there is personality. I like that. Krishna says, I like it when you're doing that. You don't worry about these different forms. You just are. Now, let's go back to consciousness for a second. As I sit, as I meditate, I'm no longer meditating. I'm just being. There's no need for thought. There's no need for intelligence. There's no need for action. There's no need for anything. Just being. Sometimes when I say I am, I worry about that, because what I mean is I am equals being. The problem with I am is that it's basically an incomplete sentence. From the point of view of language, it requires more words. It has to be completed with a period at the end. But I am equals being, no period. It simply is. So what is that consciousness? How would you define it? Usually when you define things, you require a description. You require form or color or sound or some kind of shape or the way it acts in particular environments and so on. Or if you are a poet, you're describing a feeling. But being is not a feeling. Being is, and that includes the capacity to feel. So the easiest way to describe consciousness is to experience it. Consciousness is. Now, I have been saying in the past few lectures, Krishna's consciousness, like Krishna with an apostrophe S, possessive. Krishna's consciousness. Then we get to the point. Let's just assume I am. Let's assume I'm being. Let's assume I'm experiencing it. Is that consciousness Krishna's consciousness? Wow, that's really complicated. Is it my consciousness? Or is it Krishna's consciousness? Or is it something else? And if it's something else, what could it possibly be? Oh my goodness, we have a problem here. Well, therefore Lord Chaitanya saved us, simultaneous oneness and difference. What if you were to just take a chunk of Krishna's consciousness and embody it, or grab it, or make it your own. Or even better, it is yours. You didn't have to do a thing. So when you're in the state of being, the fact that there isn't everything in there should not be a problem. Exactly what it is exactly what it should be. And then there's a lot of choice involved. And how do you make a choice? Well, you have a desire. So is consciousness desire? Does desire exist within consciousness? Or is consciousness something else entirely? And that which makes me, me, very much rests on desire. And self embraces the reality, my desire, I want. And at that point, consciousness itself, all this worry about consciousness, is less important. And self very much focuses on desire. And that is what propels us to the connection to Radha and Krishna when we make that step, because we desire the connection. And because that desire is part of the entirety of Krishna's consciousness desire, the connection can be made. Now, if you are in the deepest state of meditation and you just let everything go, it's kind of empty and totally full at the same time. I get that sounds strange. It's totally empty because all the stuff that usually floats through consciousness is not there, because you are in the foundational element upon which that consciousness exists. You don't need anything. You don't require anything. There's no anything you need to put in it, because it's already full. But there is something that we desire because we are lacking one thing, that connection to Krishna, because that part we are wants to be connected with that whole that is Krishna. It's gravity. And because Krishna also wants the same thing, to connect to us, because then the power is irresistible. And when that connection is the most powerful thing within our desire, there is naturally the unfolding of all aspects of spiritual life, a spiritual experience, rasa, and everything. This is also possible through the sound vibration, which is why kirtan exists. Which is, in the beginning I said about concerts, good music, good sound. But the kirtan is a powerful meditative instrument. And so when people who have this capacity to be engage in that shared sound vibration, it becomes easier to make the connection to Krishna. And when people are not in that level, the connection is harder, which is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not allow such persons in his personal kirtans. So, I feel, personally, that our training, our experience in spiritual life with the deities in the temple, with all of the facility we have, is a marvelous opportunity to make that connection. But it has to be done in the proper context, to not be afraid of so many things. not to be afraid of being, not to be afraid to stand before the deity and just let everything go, to allow yourself to fall into their energy, to consciously desire that connection. And don't worry about being not good enough. Don't worry about all the reasons why someone told you it cannot work. That's just another disturbing pattern. There's patterns of self-doubt. There's patterns of fear. There's patterns of hopelessness that have been placed upon us by people who are embracing these patterns themselves. So I will leave you with these thoughts, and then we could maybe do some questions, and we'll take a little break. Maha, you there? Poor you. Okay. Question one. How to see Krishna as one personality and at the same time be personal towards the different deities and their qualities? Do you see it in the chat? Oh, okay. Let's see here. I don't know if that works, but I'll give it a go. How's that? Well, that's actually very easy to answer. Each deity that you meet, you complete the process of connecting to that particular deity at that time and place. And the deities appear and manifest in a particular way in that particular place according to their temple, according to the people around them. And Krishna is infinite. We are infinitesimal. So our capacity to understand the infinite is extremely limited. So there's no, defect in connecting each time individually. Okay. I see that Kamala Mala asked some questions, but I don't see the English versions of them with the number. There we go. Does the self, number two, does the self of a person differ from his consciousness? Or is consciousness the self? If they differ, then how do they differ? Well, if I could define consciousness perfectly well, this would probably be an easy question to answer. Am I consciousness, or do I possess consciousness? Or does consciousness possess me? Complicating. I am conscious, and I am consciousness at the same time. I am conscious because I am the self. I am that infinitesimal particle. I am within consciousness because I am within Krishna's consciousness. Now, this is just some wild speculation, but if we were to go with this idea, just like we are simultaneously one and different from God, simultaneously we are of Krishna's consciousness and we possess consciousness. We are conscious. I think that's the easiest compromise to make because it fits within Lord Chaitanya's Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, not idea. As this part of Krishna, I am conscious in my existence, and I am part of Krishna's consciousness, so I am within that great consciousness. So consciousness possesses me, and I am part of it. And it is, I am conscious in and of myself. So there's the part and the whole. It all fits together. It makes sense to me. I don't know if I said it correctly. And then the question is, how does a person's consciousness differ from the consciousness of a dog or, say, the consciousness of a bird? Well, from the point of view of what we just said before, the bird or the dog or anybody's consciousness or any consciousness anywhere is the part within the whole that is the same. And from that point of view, it's the same for each and every being. That consciousness itself is the same. Not the same part, but it is the same of, you know, definition of quality. So if you were to imagine a dog would go into a meditative state, I mean, maybe they do, a dog would go into a meditative state and get right down to the bottom of it, they would be of the same exact situation that you would be when you get right down to the bottom of your meditative state. But when your consciousness, any living entity's consciousness, interacts with their body within their particular circumstance and within the world around them, that's where we start to see the differences in how it functions. But I don't think the consciousness itself is different. Number three. Wait. What is the difference in meditation? Sorry, hang on. What is the difference in meditation when people who have no idea about Radha with Krishna enter into a state of meditation on I here and now, and those who meditate? What? What is the difference in that? And people who have no idea about it enter into a state of meditation on I here and now, and those who meditate on Radha and Krishna. Okay, I guess the question really is asking, what's the difference in the meditation itself between those who meditate on Radha and Krishna and those who are meditating simply on the here and now of existence, the right now of existence? Well, let's put it like this. That if you wish to connect with and meditate on Radha and Krishna, you have to go through the state of being present in the here and now and totally connected within your own consciousness. So I would say the main difference is that for those who are meditating on the present moment, they're in an incomplete state that they need to, if they wish, move forward and make that connection from that point. So that's an incomplete state, or if that's where they want to go, it's a complete state. But from the point of view of connecting to Radha Krishna, it's an incomplete state. They need to go further. Number four, why does fear, anxiety, and confusion sometimes arise when connecting with Sri Krishna? Well, it does, but it's not happening when you're connecting. It's happening when you are in the state before you're connecting. Because when you're actually connecting, you're already connected, and it just gets more powerful. But before that starts to happen, you are in the preliminary stages preparing to make the connection. And then all of that patterned inhibition that you're not good enough, or that you're impure, or that Krishna, you're too dirty to connect to Krishna, or you just are not smart enough, or you're just not capable enough, and all of that appears. I like that the question has been phrased in the proper order. The fear, the anxiety, the confusion. I like that the words are in that order. When you're very afraid of something, doing something, because you're afraid of making all these mistakes, and you try to do it anyway, that creates a lot of anxiety, especially when you're not sure of all at all what you're doing. And what's really cool is that when you are filled with fear and anxiety, you absolutely become confused. And if you're full of fear and anxiety and you're totally confused, do not connect to Krishna, because you're just going to make a mess. Okay, and number five. Although we say that we are not the body, and many spiritual schools say that we are not the body for sure greatly influences our consciousness.
Yep.
What is the relationship between the state of our consciousness and the state of our body and their mutual influence? And I disappear. So this is, again, the same thing of patterns. Just as we spoke about patterns of social media or of music or of the environment around us affecting us, in the exact same way, the body creates patterns which affect our consciousness and direct it in a very specific way. For example, my arm is hurting me very much because I do too much work outside. I'm too old for this jazz. So it makes pain all the time. So it's creating a pattern. And I walk around grumpy. And I go, hurts. It's creating a pattern in my consciousness, grumpiness. But before I came to do this lecture, I was sitting with the deities. I forgot all about my arm. In fact, I haven't thought about it right up until this point. And now I'm feeling it again. So these patterns that we embrace create changes and effects in our consciousness. That's just the way it works. However you focus on whatever patterns you focus on, it makes a resonance that we embrace. I realized my camera went out of focus when I looked to that screen to read the questions, so I moved the questions right here. Okay, wait a minute. Oh, okay, let's do number six. Is it okay to live life purely out of interest in the events that arise from it and to grow internally from them? An alternative would be to try to give life a certain stamp of how it should be lived and what predetermined meaning or direction it should have according to traditional ideas or so-called higher-ranking personalities. Interesting. Number six. I once talked about this long time ago. One of my friends in New York, musician, he had a friend who, whatever he wanted to do, he did. He never edited any desire or thought he had. He always did exactly what he wanted to do at the moment he wanted to do it. In other words, whatever was in front of him, whatever way he wanted to move at that moment, he did it. Well, my immediate reaction within was something like, oh my God, that's going to create such a mess. But one of his arguments was, well, you know, the more you do that, the more you learn from each and every action you take, and you gradually adjust what it is you want for any particular moment in time. Now, I thought that was interesting because here in my mind, I was just imagining some kind of insane hedonism, but at the same time, he was imagining someone who was growing through the process of trial and error. Now, the second half of this question is, the alternative is to follow the path set by the authorities in spiritual life who tell you, do this, do this, don't do that, don't do that. Now, if you think about it, that's also trial and error. You try just following what you're told to do, and you see how it works out. For a lot of people, it doesn't work out. So if you examine both sides, well, if you just do it from the utilitarian point of view, there's not all that much difference. But those people who are following a spiritual tradition have some goal in mind, and all of these things that they should or shouldn't do are related to that goal, whereas somebody who's just going through life without that goal is actually doesn't have a goal to move towards. That's a much more dangerous situation. From my point of view, I would much rather have started off with that goal and done some trial and error and made adjustments than to not have a goal and just engage in trial and error. And, you know, you don't know where you're going to be ending up. Okay, so number seven. I must admit, I don't know what capacious means. I guess, do you know what it means? I don't know. Let me look it up. Hang on. Good old. Huh? Ah, spacious. Okay. Okay. Thank you. I understand that this was not, for the lecture, this was not easy for many of us to process right away. But I was inspired by how simply you explained the structure of egregors using examples. They consist of these same patterns intertwined with each other in the energy information space. And in practice, I have recently observed how exactly the opportunity to go beyond these patterns gives the potential to accept oneself without conditions, unconditionally. And this opportunity, as such, really comes from the depths, from this state of deep immersion into oneself, into being. And here the feeling of contact with Krishna, with those who are close and dear to us, becomes most conscious. But does everyone have such a conscious feeling as the need to contact Krishna, God or beloved, in such a pure state of being? How can this be explained? Okay. Well, there's a presumption or an assumption in this question, which is the last line. I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong. I'm just saying there is an assumption here that everybody, regardless, when they get to this deepest state of meditation, come to a pure state of being. Is that true? I can't actually say one way or another. I don't have any particular experience of that. I have some experience with people who have gone very deep and come to a very pure state. And they generally like to make connections once in that state to various beings, not necessarily Radha and Krishna. Now, I cannot speak to, let's say, you know, a pure impersonalist. I have no experience of that. I do not associate, I have not associated with people who are like that. But theoretically speaking, again, this is off the top of my head, perhaps looking into Shastra. Theoretically speaking, those who would be in such a state would be candidates for connection with Brahman, impersonal Brahman. So for them, because of their nature, being connected in that way is sufficient. They don't think of, they don't desire to go beyond that. Maybe some do with a desire to be God. I have no idea. But then I really doubt they would be in a pure state of being. Well, let's talk about somebody who's not an impersonalist and who really has come to pure state of being. They do want to make connections. I know Jasmuheen is a good example. She gets you to that spot, and then you make these connections to archangels with the most spectacular energy, with the most spectacular power. So when she's sitting in the caves and going through these month-long retreats of pure meditative state, she's making these connections so that she can help people all over the world. Now, I can't speak about her connection to Radha and Krishna, but I can speak to the fact that she is directly getting their energy, and then she is expanding that, not expanding, she is then emanating that outward or projecting that outward from her in her own particular context, because that's according to her desire. So again, we come back to desire. Pure being, consciousness, pure in the state, pure being, and then desire. Being who I am, being who you are. Our desires naturally flow towards Radha and Krishna. In other persons, their desire will flow according to their to the way they are, according to what they want. So I think that's fine. And I thank you all very much. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you today. And until next time, bye-bye.